Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. The city of La Mesa has agreed to a massive settlement in the case of a woman shot in the head with a beanbag by a La Mesa PD officer during a riot in May of 2020. Atmospheric rivers have drenched our region, and more are coming soon. We'll have details in our weather report. Failure of two banks taken over by the feds have prompted one East County city treasurer to issue a statement on the city's financial well-being. A judge has approved a class action in a lawsuit challenging the Trump-era Remain in Mexico policy that's left asylum seekers in dangerous conditions in Mexico. On Crime Beat, hear about a stolen vehicle suspect shot in the legs in East County and a request from the Sheriff's Department for help to find serial vehicle burglary suspects who have struck in Santee and elsewhere in our region. On People Power, the Ramona Garden Club is celebrating its 20th anniversary. Then from Public News Service, we'll have a report on junk rental fees and a report on new county programs to help fathers and their children. On 2023 Talks from Public News Service, we'll have some national news stories today, including the Biden budget proposal, the latest on bank failures, and a plan to reduce drug prices. Learn how to nominate a local teacher as a classroom hero. Hear about a refugee job fair coming up and how you can voice your views on the county's housing blueprint survey. Then we'll take you out to PhytoFest in Santee, the largest local dog festival, and on the road to Lake Cuyamaca, voted among the best campgrounds in America. On Destination East County, hear about all the fun festivals and events coming up, from Easter egg extravaganzas to Earth Day celebrations and more. There's an important hearing coming up in Alpine on the future of Loveland Reservoir, and we'll have details. The pandemic ending means cuts to CalFresh, and California News Service has a report on how that's set to harm some of our state's most vulnerable residents. If you had damage in the recent storms, the tax filing deadline has been extended. And finally, from California News Service, we'll have a report on the value of unpaid caregivers in our state. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The city of La Mesa has reached a $10 million settlement
in a civil lawsuit filed by Leslie Furcron, a 59-year-old great-grandmother who was struck in the head by a beanbag projectile fired by a La Mesa police officer during a racial justice protest that ended in a riot on May 30, 2020. Her attorney, Dante Pride, said his client suffered life-changing injuries from the incident, which left Furcron blind in one eye. She was put into a medically induced coma, spent a week in the intensive care unit, and had to use a walker after the shooting. According to Pride, the officer's actions were grossly negligent at best and criminal at worst. The district attorney saw things differently. The DA review found the La Mesa Police Department Detective Eric Knudsen should not face criminal charges, and that he was acting to protect other officers, mistakenly believing Furcron had hurled a rock at officers. She had thrown an empty beverage can. Furcron live-streamed a video while driving to the protest in which she called police murderers and called for the police station to be burned down. She acknowledged the situation was a riot, but might not arrive too late to hear police announcements ordering the crowd to disperse and declaring the protest to be an illegal gathering after rocks and bottles had been thrown at police by others. Nearby, City Hall and vehicles had been set on fire and windows at the police dispatch center had been broken. Protesters had scrambled onto an armored Bearcat vehicle in the police station parking lot. Flashbang devices and gas canisters had been deployed before Detective Knudsen saw Furcron toss an object and fired a beanbag round which struck her in the forehead. Knudsen said he was aiming for her torso, as is required by the police department's policies. CBS 8 reports that the beanbag gun used to fire the shot has gone missing. CBS 8 reports that its investigation found that the officer who shot Fercron was not properly trained on the gun because it belonged to the San Diego Sheriff's Department. Sheriff's personnel had been called in for mutual aid as civil unrest turned increasingly violent. The crowd originally came to protest the killing of George Floyd, a black man, by white officers in Minneapolis, as well as to protest a La Mesa police officer's treatment of a young black man, Amari Johnson, at a trolley stop. That officer, Matt Dages, was later fired by the city for falsifying a police report to accuse Johnson of assaulting the officer. The city of La Mesa has made numerous reforms. The city hired a new police chief, Ray Sweeney, who rolled out a 6-point plan to restore community trust and held a series of community meetings. The city of La Mesa created a community police oversight board, implemented de-escalation techniques, and worked to improve diversity in recruiting, among other changes. Chief Sweeney, in a community forum on August 2021, acknowledged that there were things that occurred in La Mesa that never should have happened, and that it's important to remember the past while working to restore public trust. When we have protesters and counter-protesters, he says, that's the hardest job in the world. Our job is to make sure everyone has a say and keep the peace, he said at the time. Fercron has voiced gratitude for community members who voiced support to her after her injuries. She has called herself a productive member of society who is attending San Diego City College before her injuries. In a June 2020 press conference, Leslie Fercron said, I had a job as a care provider, but now I will need to get help to get cared for. Her attorney called the large settlement a victory and said it may be the largest payout for a non-lethal use of force incident in the county. But he added, for victims of police misconduct, these victories cannot continue to be only monetary. Justice must also be reformative, demonstrative, and in some instances, penal. He called for holding officers accountable and changing use of force police regarding dangerous projectiles. The attorney concluded, quote, we look forward to engaging with the city of La Mesa, its legislators, and the community to this end. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The latest atmospheric river to drench our region dumped several inches of rainfall in many San Diego County areas over the 2 days ending Wednesday, March 15th at 5:45 p.m. Palomar got nearly 6 inches of precipitation, 5.78 inches. In East County, the Mesa Grande Reservation had 3.8 inches, and Lake Cuyamaca got over 3.5 inches. Julian got about 2.5 inches, and nearby Pine Hills over 3 inches. Descanso, where our station is headquartered, had 2.5 inches. Many other communities got between 1.5 and 2 inches, including La Mesa, Santee, Ramona, and Pine Valley. Though this is heavy precipitation for San Diego County, some areas elsewhere in California have set all-time records for snow levels. Topping the list is Mammoth, with a whopping 780 inches of snow currently at the summit. That's a staggering 65 feet, according to the Mammoth Winter Report. Mono County Tourism tweeted a photo from Mammoth Lakes with a warning stating all roads in and out of Mono County are currently closed. That's as of March 16th. Avalanche danger is extreme, they warned. Avalanches have already struck in some other California mountain areas, as well as Lake Tahoe in recent days. The wet weather has caused significant damage here in San Diego County. State Route 78 closed down due to a massive sinkhole, according to Caltrans, and in Julian, some residents are experiencing leaking roofs and other damage. Winds blew down trees across the county, blocking roadways, and geology experts are warning of signs of an impending cliff collapse in Torrey Pines. There is a chance of showers returning over the St. Patrick's Day weekend, according to the National Weather Service. Widespread rain and snow at the higher elevations are expected once again on Tuesday and Wednesday. For East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Two bank failures have sent ripples of concern through the financial community after the Federal Deposit Insurance Company, or FDIC, took control of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. How did the bank failures happen? The failures are partly tied to the Trump administration's rollback of Dodd-Frank banking regulations enacted during the Obama administration. Dodd-Frank had required strict regulation of banks with more than $50 million in assets. But in 2018, the Trump administration rolled back those regulations and raised the limit to $250 million. So mid-sized banks no longer had to undergo stress tests or certain regulatory scrutiny. Those rollbacks were approved by Congress with overwhelming Republican support, as well as support of a handful of Democrats. Silicon Valley Bank, the 14th largest bank in the nation, got in trouble when many of its tech industry and business startup customers needed money and made large withdrawals. So SVB had to start selling assets, mainly bonds, at a loss to free up funds for those withdrawals until its losses became too high, fueling a bank run by customers fearful of losing their money that prompted the FDIC to take action. Deposits are federally insured only up to $250,000. Like Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank had over 90% of its accounts at amounts over that limit. The FDIC, along with the Treasury Department and Federal Reserve, have announced the two bank failures posed a substantial risk to the entire banking system should jittery investors trigger a wave of bank runs. So the feds took the rare step of announcing that to stabilize the market, it is guaranteeing even deposits over $250,000 at the two failed banks, enabling companies with accounts there to make payroll and pay other bills. Although the feds are helping restore funds for investors, taxpayers will not be bailing out the banks. Instead, the Biden administration is putting that burden on shareholders and holders of unsecured corporate bonds to absorb the losses. The Fed plans to make additional funding available for eligible financial institutions to prevent runs on similar banks in the future, CNN reports. Wall Street has reacted to that news with relief. While markets fell over 3% on the day Silicon Valley Bank was shut down, two nights later, after the Fed's announcement, NASDAQ futures and S&P 500 rose 1.3% each. Federal takeover of the two failed banks prompted La Mesa's newly elected city treasurer, Matt Strabone, to issue a statement assuring that the city's investment holdings, quote, will be able to weather any difficulties in the banking industry without significant loss of funds, end quote. That's because the city holds certificates of deposits, or CDs, with banks across the nation, and none of those CDs are more than the FDIC insured limit of $250,000. Moreover, the city's liquidity, valued around $25 million, is held by California's local agency investment fund, which is operated by the state treasurer and, quote, is not in any danger, Strabone says. However, about 1% of the city's investment portfolio, around $1 million, is in J.P. Morgan Chase corporate bonds purchased by the former La Mesa city treasurer. While there is no indication that J.P. Morgan Chase is in any danger of failing, Cerrone says, if J.P. Morgan Chase were in trouble, this investment would also be in trouble. During the 2022 election campaign, Cerrone characterized the J.P. Morgan Chase bonds as an unwise investment and committed to purchasing no additional corporate bonds issued by companies in the banking industry. Now he assures, I remain firmly committed to this. East County Magazine sent a public records request to the County of San Diego and to East County's other cities, El Cajon, Lemon Grove, and Santee, to ask if they have any money invested anywhere that is not FDIC insured, including unsecured corporate banking bonds. As of our show taping deadline, Lemon Grove and El Cajon have responded that their cities do not hold any unsecured corporate banking bonds. The City of Santee and the County of San Diego have received our requests, but have not yet provided responses. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
On March 15th, a federal court largely denied the Biden administration's motion to dismiss the lawsuit Immigrant Defenders Law Center versus Mayorkas, brought on behalf of people seeking asylum who were stranded outside the U.S. as a result of the Trump administration's Remain in Mexico policy. In its decision, the court declared that if true, the plaintiff's allegations would amount to acute and sweeping violations of their bedrock rights. Plaintiffs in the case include Immigrant Defenders Law Center and Jewish Family Services of San Diego, organizations providing representation to asylum seekers, along with 11 people seeking asylum who were subjected to remain in Mexico. The court also granted the plaintiff's motion for class certification to represent a larger group of individuals in similar situations who had their cases terminated or who received final removal orders under the original version of the policy during the Trump administration. Counsel for the plaintiffs include the National Immigration Project of the National Lawyers Guild, the Center for Gender and Refugee Studies, and the Southern Poverty Law Center, among others. Introduced in 2019, the Remain in Mexico policy forced tens of thousands of asylum seekers to await their U.S. immigration court dates just south of the border in some of the most dangerous cities in the world. Trapped in Mexico, few of those had access to U.S. legal services, and many fell victim to grave violence. Conditions were so perilous that many asylum seekers subject to the policy, including some of the plaintiffs in the case, were unable to return to the border for their court hearings and subsequently were denied protection, as acknowledged in the government's own memorandum terminating the policy. Less than 2% of asylum seekers subject to Remain in Mexico were ultimately granted asylum. The Biden administration denounced Remain in Mexico and suspended the policy immediately upon assuming office. Though the administration's initial attempts to terminate the policy were challenged by anti-immigrant state politicians, last summer, the U.S. Supreme Court sided with the government and advocates, holding that the government had authority to end that policy. Yet thousands of asylum seekers who were subjected to the policy continue to languish outside the United States with no end in sight. Luis Gonzalez, an attorney for Jewish Family Services of San Diego, had this reaction to the court's action this week. "We commend the Honorable Judge Jesus Bernal for certifying the classes in our lawsuit and denying the federal government's motion to dismiss the plaintiffs' claims regarding their right to apply for asylum, access counsel, and obtain a full and fair hearing," he says, adding, "It is long past time that the individuals placed in Remain in Mexico receive the justice and safety in the U.S. that they deserve. Asylum seekers should have access to protection in the U.S. instead of being left in perilous situations across the border when they are already fleeing violence and persecution in their home countries. We must get back to centering humanity," he says. Melissa Crow, director of litigation at the Center for Gender and Refugee Studies, says the court got it right, adding, "It is baffling that the government would even attempt to defend the grievous harms inflicted by a policy that the administration itself has condemned, citing its unjustifiable human costs." She adds, "The court rightly noted that Congress did not authorize the government to implement the policy in a way that would undermine the right to apply for asylum. We will continue to fight vigorously to ensure that all asylum seekers who remain in legal limbo as a result of the Remain in Mexico policy have a meaningful opportunity to present their claims," she concludes. Stephanie Alvarez-Jones, staff attorney with the Southern Poverty Law Center's Immigrant Justice Project, called the Remain in Mexico policy a human rights travesty and suggests the policy is racist. She calls the court's action to address harm caused by the Trump-era Remain in Mexico policy a first step in remedying these harms and achieving justice for thousands of families. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Crime Beat Report. An Alpine man found in a stolen vehicle was shot in the legs by a San Diego sheriff's deputy in unincorporated El Cajon on March 19th. The suspect has been identified as 25-year-old Brenton Kisenbaugh of Alpine. He was spotted by deputies in a stolen truck parked on Oro Street in El Cajon. According to the sheriff's department, the man disobeyed multiple orders to exit the vehicle and instead put the vehicle in reverse, crashing into a parked car. He then drove forward, nearly hitting deputies and a bystander, and struck a patrol vehicle. This prompted a deputy to open fire, striking the suspect in both legs. The suspect fled in the vehicle, initiating a pursuit before crashing and rolling over on 2nd Street near Greenfield Drive. He then fled on foot, prompting a search that included a helicopter. A resident observed the suspect hopping over a fence to try and hide in a shed in the backyard of a home on Arlington Place, so the resident called 911. The suspect was apprehended and taken to a hospital for treatment of gunshot wounds in his legs, as well as injuries sustained in the crash. He faces felony charges of vehicle theft, assault with a deadly weapon, and felony evading arrest, according to San Diego police. The deputy who shot the suspect served out of the Lakeside substation and has been with the Sheriff's Department for around 5 years, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. His name has not yet been released. The deputy involved shooting investigation will be led by the San Diego Police Department, with the Sheriff's Department conducting an administrative review. Anyone with information on this case is asked to contact the San Diego Police Department at 619-531-2293. You can also leave an anonymous tip by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
Investigators from the Santee Sheriff's Station and Crime Stoppers are asking for public help to identify and find two suspects involved in a series of vehicle burglaries across San Diego County. Crime Stoppers is offering up to a $1,000 reward to anybody with information that leads to an arrest in this case. For nearly a year and a half, a man and woman are suspected of numerous vehicle burglaries. Since October of 2021, the two suspects have targeted vehicles where victims were gathered for large events, such as a cemetery for a funeral and community parks where families were attending youth sporting events. While the victims were away from their vehicles, the suspects broke into them and stole valuables. The last reported incident was in February in Santee. After stealing items from the vehicles, the suspects used the victims' stolen credit cards at local stores. In one incident, the suspects bought more than $8,000 worth of merchandise. The suspects are a man and a woman, both described as Hispanic. They have been seen in a white Chevrolet Silverado with an extended cab and a black bed cover. One suspect is a man around 40 to 50 years old, 5 feet 10 inches tall, with a heavy build and a goatee. He has full sleeve tattoos on his arms as well as hand and neck tattoos. On multiple occasions, he's been seen wearing a black and white striped hooded sweatshirt and dark pants with black and white Adidas tennis shoes. The second suspect is described as between 30 and 40 years old, standing 5 feet 6 inches tall, and she has a heavy build with long black hair. If you have any information about these incidents, please call the Santee Sheriff's Station at 619-956-4000. You can also call the Crime Stoppers Anonymous tip line at 888-580-8477 to be eligible for that reward, or visit sdcrimestoppers.org for information on how to send a web or mobile app tip. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
Still abloom after two decades, the Ramona Garden Club is celebrating its 20th anniversary. The club was founded in 2003 by a group of ambitious gardeners who wanted to bring the Ramona community together by teaching folks the many benefits and value horticulture brings to each of us. On April 5th, from 1 to 3 p.m., the Ramona Garden Club will celebrate its anniversary at Collier Park in Ramona. The public is welcome to come celebrate, enjoy refreshments, and tour the beautiful park. Also at the event, the Ramona Garden Club will recognize the many volunteer hours members have given to improve gardens such as the Chandler Herb Garden at the San Diego Zoo Safari Park and the Collier Park Children's Garden, as well as the time volunteers have dedicated to securing many grants and educational scholarships to those entering the fields of horticulture. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show here on KNSJ. I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to hear our show, where we report news that matters to people across our region. In an era of cuts to many major media outlets,
shrinking local news coverage, and cries of fake news attacking journalists with courage to report the truth, it's important to recognize and support KNSJ Radio. KNSJ gives airtime for original reporting on issues that matter here in San Diego and East County, as well as national news that impacts people here at home. You can donate to help support real news, honest reporting, and inclusion of your community's views and voices at knsj.org. That website again is knsj.org.
Renters these days are getting hit with all kinds of extra charges, and consumer advocates want the feds to crack down on these so-called junk rental fees. A new report from the National Consumer Law Center finds many landlords charge excessive fees, not just for utilities, but also to process a rental application, move trash to the bins, accept certain forms of payment, or notify you of late payment, to allow roommates or pets, etc. April Kunhoff with the NCLC says with rents already sky high, all extra fees must be disclosed ahead of time.
There are fees that people can't opt out of, so it's very difficult to comparison shop or to actually know how much does it cost to rent this apartment.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and the Federal Trade Commission are both looking into the issue of junk fees. Advocates want the feds to crack down on abuses by large landlords and debt collectors and to work with private companies like Zillow and Apartments.com to make sure fees are disclosed up front. Kunhoff says pest control fees may even be illegal.
The duty of a landlord is to provide a habitable space. So you should be delivering an apartment that's free of rodents, free of cockroaches, and it shouldn't be up to the tenant to pay an additional sum.
The California legislature is currently considering Senate Bill 611, which would force landlords to disclose upfront the true rent and any required fees. It is part of a six-bill legislative package to combat junk fees in housing, hotels, car rentals, ticketing, electric vehicle purchases, and small business financing. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
San Diego County supervisors have approved a new behavioral health services program focused on culturally appropriate programming to strengthen relationships between fathers and their children and bolster fathers' parenting skills. The new program will mean an 8-fold increase in these services. Dr. Luke Bergman, Director of Behavioral Health Services at the County Health and Human Services Agency, says evidence shows early interventions in the lives of young people is the best way to support resilience and well-being. Parent or caregiver engagement is vital for the mental health development in children, he adds. Adverse childhood experiences and toxic stress are associated with 9 out of 10 leading causes of death nationally, according to the county. These poor health outcomes are passed from generation to generation. The new positive parenting and father-to-child programs provide support to families to help break the cycle of trauma. It has options from in-person to virtual meetings, as well as group or individual skill-building classes for parents, father figures, and caregivers. The father-to-child program has provided services to underserved families in the central region since 2012. It produces culturally specific programming for fathers of all ethnicities and 7 priority populations, including underserved Asian, Pacific Islander, Latino, and military families. Activities include curriculum-based group education, counseling, outreach, and flexible funds to support employment and recreation opportunities. The program teaches fathering techniques and skills, in addition to increasing awareness about the importance of active and engaged father figures. County Behavioral Health Services, or BHS, will build on these existing programs and expand parenting program services to focus on fathers countywide, not just the central region, while providing greater access to those underserved communities. A key focus of enhanced programming is to remove barriers to participation, such as transportation services and child care. BHS focuses on health care, family, and school to prevent adverse outcomes and health disparities. It addresses the importance of fathers, male caregivers, and father figures in the lives of young people. Projected annual costs for parenting program services will increase from $250,000 to $2 million, but the potential rewards are priceless. The County of San Diego's Behavioral Health Services Department provides mental health and substance use disorder services to over 111,000 San Diego County residents of all ages. Services are provided through 9 county-operated programs and embrace Live Well San Diego, the county's vision for a region that is building better health
living safely, and thriving. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
We'll have some national news headlines from Public News Service, and then we'll be back with more local news.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This president has put it in black and white. We look forward to seeing a plan that suggests that Social Security is off the table. This president believes the biggest threat to Social Security are those who want to cut it. His budget says no.
White House Budget Director Shalonda Young testified before the Senate Budget Committee Wednesday to defend President Joe Biden's 2024 spending plan. Republicans claim the $6.9 trillion budget will eliminate jobs and add to the national debt. GOP lawmakers are refusing to raise the nation's debt unless Democrats agree to hefty spending cuts. Senator Mitt Romney grilled Young over Biden's recent statements about Republicans floating cuts to Social Security.
I really do find that just offensive in the extreme, which is you can't name anyone who is proposing Social Security benefits. I know my colleagues. No one is proposing cutting Social Security benefits for our Social Security recipients.
Senate Republican Whip John Thune and his GOP colleagues are seeking answers from federal regulators over the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. He alleges they were asleep at the switch and should have spotted indicators of the bank's impending failure.
This clearly, if you look at the particular circumstances around this incident, should have been anticipated.
During his visit to Las Vegas Wednesday, President Joe Biden highlighted his administration's efforts to lower prescription drug costs and took aim at Republicans who he said want to cut benefits.
Let's finish the job. Let's protect the lower prescription drug costs for everyone. Let's expand health care for more people and to get care. Let's keep building the economy from the middle out and the bottom up.
Border officials testified before GOP members of the House Homeland Security Committee in McAllen, Texas, on the ongoing crisis. Chair Mark Green called out his Democratic committee colleagues who were absent from the hearing and heavily criticized President Biden and Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas's border policies.
It's clear to me, in violation to the laws written by the United States Congress, passed and signed by previous presidents, this secretary of DHS wants nothing more than to flood the country with people.
Finally, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg spoke at a safety summit hosted by the Federal Aviation Administration and said he's concerned about the uptick in airline close calls following a spate of recent incidents, including one last month in Austin, Texas, where a cargo plane came within feet of landing on top of a Southwest Airlines flight.
While U.S. aviation remains an exceptionally safe way to travel, we have seen an uptick in runway incursions and close calls, something that we are not going to allow to turn into something worse.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our ATRUST indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Do you know an amazing teacher? San Diego County Credit Union and the San Diego County Office of Education are recognizing three local classroom heroes every quarter. Winning teachers will be featured on SDCCU social media platforms and receive a $250 Visa gift card. The credit union's president and CEO, Teresa Campbell, says our local educators have an incredible impact on our students. SDCCU is a proud supporter of our local teachers, and we are excited to show our appreciation for their dedication and commitment to our community through this program. Teachers, students, parents, and the community are encouraged to nominate a deserving teacher by visiting sdccu.com/classroomheroes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. This is Jonathan Getz.
Grossmont College will welcome more than 50 employers representing industries such as healthcare, hotels and tourism, public safety, local government, retail, and defense as part of its second annual Refugee Job Fair on March 23rd. This event will connect the growing number of refugees settling in our region with employers who are looking for job candidates. Mock interviews, resume assistance, and donated professional photo services all will be available. Job seekers can get help navigating the fair, and interpreters in multiple languages will be on site. Food and refreshments will also be provided. No registration is needed, and everyone is welcome to attend. The second annual Refugee Job Fair will be held from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Thursday, March 23rd, in the main quad at Grossmont College in El Cajon. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Getz with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. County officials want San Diego County residents to take a survey to help shape the county's housing blueprint. The blueprint's goals were adopted from the San Diego Association of Government, or SANDAG, which aims to curb the region's housing crisis by finding ways to build and retain affordable housing, add more housing near transit hubs, reduce housing prices, and help people afford to stay in their existing homes. County supervisors approved a draft housing blueprint in December that was created with public input, but the county wants more public engagement as it works towards a completed plan. The survey asks people to weigh in on those goals and add your ideas on what should be added to the plan. Home building in our region hasn't kept up with population growth and housing demand for decades. That has caused housing costs to skyrocket, making it financially hard, if not impossible, for people to buy homes or stay in their existing residences. The county has taken numerous actions to add affordable housing in recent years, including announcing a goal last October of working with the City of San Diego to build 10,000 affordable housing units by 2030. In February, the county secured an additional $24.5 million from the state to create more affordable housing. The county's Engage San Diego County webpage was created to make it easier for the public to get information on upcoming public projects and to be involved in the planning process of county projects and initiatives. To take the survey, you can visit sandiegocounty.gov and type Engage San Diego in the search bar. Then click on Housing Blueprint to voice your views.
On March 11th, East County Magazine intern Daniela Torres visited FidoFest in Santee, the largest dog festival in East County. She spoke with some of the vendors there and checked out the activities as people and their pets were having a tail-wagging good time.
I'm Becky Lowndes, the Special Event Supervisor for the City of Santee, and this is the 7th Annual FidoFest located at Santee's Town Center Community Park. It is an event that brings dog lovers from San Diego City, San Diego County together, offer opportunities for them to get involved, find adoptable animals, maybe take them for their forever home, participate in arts and crafts, participate in some of the awesome contests and demonstrations that we have, and overall have a tail wagging good time.
Downstairs we have a daycare, grooming, and boarding facility, and then upstairs we've got a bar, cafe with lots of games, shuffleboard, mini golf, so come on by, bring your dog and have a beer and enjoy.
Spay-Neuter Action Project provides low-cost spaying and neutering services in their mobile clinic, the Neuter Scooter.
Spay-Neuter is very important. One, it's healthy for the animal. It reduces any chance of certain kinds of cancers. Mm-hmm. It's also very good for the pet owner because if the pet is spayed or neutered, they're going to be a lot easier to train and learn basic commands. And it's very important for the overall community because there are just way too many dogs, cats, and rabbits that do not have homes. And unfortunately, the shelters are at max capacity. So if we can reduce the amount of unwanted litters that are being born, then our our shelters would not have to deal with pet overpopulation and suffering and euthanasia.
Dog Rescue Without Borders is a club that was created by a group of Olympian high schoolers with the intent of spreading awareness and donating all proceeds made from these handmade dog toys to Friends of Humane Services in Tijuana. The Santee's Sheriff's Department also held a canine demonstration. Dogs were present at Fido Fest with their baying contest held to see who is the largest, the smallest, or the best at tricks.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery.
And this is Jonathan Getz.
With this week's Destination East County.
With springtime fast approaching, East County has an array of events coming up, including St. Patrick's Day festivals, a butterfly jungle, an Easter extravaganza, a harmonica festival, classic cruise nights, a charity golf tournament, an Earth Day fair, the Coyote Music Festival, Spring Garden Festival, vintage, alpine, and more.
Hoolifest, the biggest St. Patrick's Day celebration in East County, will return after a hiatus, and this year the celebrating will span 3 days from March 17th through 19th at Hooli's Irish Pub and Grill at both the Rancho San Diego and La Mesa Grossmont Center locations. Plus, you can enjoy live Irish music, such as the Rebel Celts, host a pint of Guinness, and savor traditional Irish foods and cheer. For more information, you can visit hoolies.com.
The San Diego Zoo Safari Park in Escondido invites you to a spring safari featuring a butterfly jungle, which will be open daily from March 18th through May 14th. Visitors can wander through the hidden jungle aviary among hundreds of colorful, fluttering butterflies, have a chance to feed them, and learn how they contribute to our ecosystem, as well as help save wildlife in our own backyard. The Butterfly Jungle will shine a spotlight on the incredible local wildlife in the Southwest region, including San Diego, a biodiversity hotspot. Guests are encouraged to visit the Safari Park's Native Nectar Garden and Baja Gardens. Guests can also enjoy live music, dancing, juggling, and strawberry-themed treats. Find more information at sdzsafaripark.org/spring-safari.
Grossmont Center in La Mesa will host an Easter extravaganza on April 8th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., filled with family fun, including a scavenger hunt for kids with prizes, face painting, balloon animals, games, and photos with the Easter Bunny. This is a BYOB event, that's Bring Your Own Basket. For details or to register, you can visit grossmontcenter.com.
Local and national stars will be playing American Blues Harmonica music at Spring Harp Fest. The Family Fun event, which raises funds to benefit music education countywide, will be held April 8th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Harry Griffin Park in La Mesa. The annual showcase includes local jams, competition among unknown players, and some of the best professional players in the music scene. Guests are encouraged to bring harmonica, hula hoops, cameras, bubbles, and dancing shoes. Food will be available for purchase. Locals can even compete to earn the title Best of the Unknown Players. Spring Harp Fest has helped raise funds to purchase 5,000 harmonicas for local school music programs and helps fund summer blues camps. For more information, visit springharpfest.org.
Opening night for Cajon Classic Cruises will be Wednesday, April 12th along Main Street in downtown El Cajon. The car shows will continue each Wednesday from 5 to 7:30 p.m. all summer long. For more information and a schedule, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Shelter to Soldier is a nonprofit that adopts dogs from local shelters and rescue organizations and trains them to become psychiatric service dogs for post-9/11 veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, and/or military sexual trauma. The nonprofit group will hold its fourth annual Saving Lives, One Swing at a Time golf tournament and dinner on Friday, April 21st, on the Championship Oak Glen course at Singing Hills Golf Resort at Sequan. To register or get details, visit sheltertosoldier.org.
For its annual Earth Day celebration, the Desert View Tower and Boulder Park will host a Boulder Fair on Saturday, April 22nd from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Festivities will include live music as well as arts and crafts, gifts, jewelry, displays of rocks and gemstones, healing herbs, gardening tips, a plant sale, organic produce, superfoods, tie-dyed products, a desert plant walk, and a kids' zone. There will also be Mexican food for purchase and a gourmet coffee truck. Desert View Tower and Boulder Park are located just off Interstate 8 on Inkapa Road in Hakumba Hot Springs. You can get details at Desert View Tower's Facebook page.
On May 6th, Cuyamaca College is combining several major events for a springtime extravaganza. The Water Conservation Garden will host its Spring Garden and Butterfly Festival from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Guests can watch butterfly releases, and children can join a pollinator party to hear stories and craft their own pollinator wings. The garden will also have specialty vendors, workshops, and food trucks. Coyote Music Festival will present local musicians in the garden's amphitheater all day, from rock and roll bands to singer-songwriters. In addition, Cuyamaca College's Ornamental Horticulture Department will hold its largest plant sale of the year in their brand new nursery. Plus, the Heritage of the Americas Museum will be hosting tours throughout the day. Find a full schedule for this May 6th event at thegarden.org.
You can savor tastes from 25 wineries, 3 breweries, and 20 local restaurants at Vintage Alpine. That's on May 7th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Summers Past Farms in Flin Springs. Vintage Alpine began in 1990, and it's now one of the biggest events of its kind in San Diego County. Over 500 people from all over the Southwest attend. The event, which also features relaxing live music in a garden setting, as well as a silent auction and opportunities to meet wine and food experts. All proceeds from Vintage Alpine are used by the Kiwanis Club of Alpine to provide services and programs supporting the children of San Diego. For tickets and reservations, you can visit vintagealpine.com.
That's all for this week.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
CampSpot, a campsite booking website, has named Lake Cuyamaca Recreation and Park District the fourth best place for tent campers in America. The contest is CampSpot's second annual competition, which includes various categories from glamping to RV parks. CampSpot researched over 70,000 data points for its awards, including bookings, reviews, and other factors, to come up with its nominees. Winners were chosen by the public voting on their favorite campgrounds in America. According to CampSpot, Lake Cuyamaca is the jewel of the San Diego Mountains, the ideal mixture of adventure and relaxation. Whether you visit for a day, a weekend, or a two-week vacation, it's a place so beautiful you won't want to leave. Lake Cuyamaca offers canoeing, kayaking, a boat launch, and fishing. The only year-round trout fishery in San Diego County, it's known as an angler's paradise. There's also the Cuyamaca Pub, a recently revamped restaurant with lakefront views, where campers can eat if they don't want to cook over a campfire. In addition to tent sites, there are also cabin rentals available at Lake Cuyamaca, which is located on State Route 79. The Cuyamaca area is beautiful year-round, with fall foliage in autumn, warm summer days, spring wildflowers, and occasional snow in winter. A trail around the lake is a wildlife viewer's delight, where visitors frequently spot deer, coyotes, waterfowl, wild turkeys, and even bald eagles. Lake Cuyamaca is also a good location to pitch a tent to use as home base for enjoying day trips to Julian, a historic gold rush town, the Anza Borrego Desert, Green Valley Falls, Mount Laguna, and other nearby destinations. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Gerald Stevenson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jonathan Getz with East County Magazine's Green Scene Report. Loveland Reservoir near Alpine remains closed to public access for fishing, hiking, and recreation since storms in January destroyed the floating fishing dock and caused severe erosion. The damage occurred after Sweetwater Water Authority drained the lake to an unprecedented dead pool status, killing off fish and destroying habitat. Even after January's heavy storms, Sweetwater again drained the reservoir, angering recreational enthusiasts and environmentalists. The Alpine Community Planning Group will hear a presentation by Sweetwater on the current and future state of Loveland Reservoir on Thursday, March 23rd at 6 p.m. Friends of Loveland Reservoir, a group formed to advocate for restoring the lake, is urging community members to come to the meeting and speak on the importance of saving the reservoir. The group notes that the U.S. Forest Service previously partnered with Sweetwater to, quote, provide public fishing access, according to a sign still posted at the closed reservoir. Sweetwater gave the U.S. Forest Service land near Descanso to expand habitat in Cleveland National Forest, and in exchange, the Forest Service gave Sweetwater land near Loveland Reservoir to improve public fishing access and benefit the community. Residents are asking Sweetwater, federal, and local officials to make sure that those promises to the community are honored, not broken. The Alpine Community Planning Group meeting will be held at the Alpine Community Center, and again, that's on March 23rd at 6 p.m.
CalFresh benefits are set to plummet for almost 5 million people in the state starting in a few weeks as the emergency COVID increase expires. Individuals will lose an average of $82 a month. Families will get about $200 less. Trinidad Luna, who has had both his legs amputated at the knee due to diabetes, says he's gone from $215 a month down to $25.
I don't know who came up with this price. Did they say, okay, I'll volunteer to live this way for about a month or two and see if it could be done? I doubt that. It's hard to get around and go to these food banks with my wheelchair falling apart, and it's just hard, but I keep on pushing. I'm not going to give up.
Advocates advise people to take full advantage of other anti-hunger programs, such as free school breakfast and lunch, and Market Match, which doubles CalFresh dollars at participating farmers markets. Mary is a CalFresh participant from Orange County who was hospitalized during COVID, has a severe eye condition, and has battled prediabetes. She says she will see her benefits drop from $281 a month down to $23. She worries that the drop in benefits could impact her sugar levels and overall health.
Foods that I was not used to, they are more quality, but they are also more expensive. So it did help a lot, the food stamps, on having better food choices to get the prediabetes out of my body.
Frank Tamborello with Hunger Action LA says while people can't come close to replace what's being cut, there are some things they can do to help.
First of all, when people's CalFresh benefits do get adjusted downward, they can go to the county office and re-enter their monthly living expenses, and this could result in a higher benefit. Second, there are a lot of families that could qualify for the WIC program, and you're able to get the WIC and CalFresh programs at the same time.
Anna Alicia Carr, Community Advocacy Director in LA for the American Heart Association, noted that a recent report from the University of Southern California found that 25% of households in LA didn't have enough food on the table, and this number is even higher among Black and Latino residents, women, young adults, and low-income households.
Of the households who are experiencing food insecurity, 4 out of 10 of those report having children in the home. So we are seeing food insecurity at levels that are worse than even 10 years before the pandemic.
The AHA supports State Senate Bill 605, which would expand the Supplemental California Fruit and Vegetable Program. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show here on KNSJ.
I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to hear our show, where we report news that matters to people across our region. In an era of cuts to many major media outlets, shrinking local news coverage, and cries of fake news attacking journalists with courage to report the truth, it's important to recognize and support KNSJ Radio. KNSJ gives airtime for original reporting on issues that matter here in San Diego and East County, as well as national news that impacts people here at home. You can donate to help support real news, honest reporting, and inclusion of your community's views and voices at knsj.org. That website again is knsj.org.
San Diego County residents, along with residents in most other California counties, can delay filing their state and federal tax returns until October 16th if you were impacted by the recent winter storms. Governor Gavin Newsom says, as communities across the state continue recovering from the damage caused by the winter storms, California is working swiftly to help recovering Californians get back on their feet. The state is aligning with the Biden administration and extending the tax filing deadline in addition to the tax relief announced earlier this year. Those with storm damage can also claim a deduction for disaster loss. The tax relief applies to individual income tax returns that would normally be due April 18th, as well as to quarterly estimated tax payments that would have been due on January 17th and April 18th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Some 4.4 million family caregivers in California provide more than 4 billion hours of uncompensated care each year, work that is worth about $81 billion, according to a new report. Researchers from AARP also found that the value of those unpaid contributions has gone up by $18 billion since 2019. USC gerontology professor Dr. Donna Benton says caregivers dedicate, on average, more than 18 hours a week.
None of us anticipate how difficult it can be to work with medications, physicians and nurses and appointments and transportation and finding social services and understanding limited incomes.
California has a network of 11 taxpayer-funded caregiver resource centers that ease the burden with legal services, case management, family consultation, and education programs. Groups like AARP and the California Coalition on Family Caregiving advocate for the state's caregivers in Sacramento. California lawmakers are currently considering two bills to improve the state's paid family leave program. Assembly Bill 518 would allow family of choice caregivers, not just relatives, to take job-protected paid time off to care for a loved one. Benton says that's particularly important to members of the LGBTQ community who may not have children or other immediate relatives to care for them.
And you would want them to be there to help you, but they can't because the law doesn't allow that. So it is very important that we have more choice because family structures are different, but also the best care is provided by somebody who knows you and wants to be there for you.
Advocates are also pressing for passage of State Senate Bill 616, which would expand paid sick leave from 3 days to seven. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.